This is the Ty Butler Show on 98.7 ESPN.
And we are cooking for the next 3.5 hours, going till 6:30, leading you into what is a pivotal game between the Knicks and the Bucks for both teams. More on that in a moment. Chris Canty, who you just heard in the promo during the SportsCenter update, going to join us at 4 o'clock. So I'm excited to talk some football with him. And it's a gorgeous day because it's a buffet. I mean, that platter should be full. You've got the men's championship game tomorrow night, UConn versus Purdue. We'll get into that. But preceded by the game that's on my television right now, you get the women's national championship game. And it's Iowa against South Carolina. And it reminds me a little bit of those Warriors-Cavs matchups in the NBA, because it was the best player alive versus the best team, and it's going to be history regardless, because we're either going to see the coronation of arguably the greatest player in women's college history in Caitlin Clark, or we're going to see history for the Gamecocks winning their third national championship in the span of 7 years, which punctuates, you know, a fantastic, impressive dynasty. So we'll be all over that as that game unfolds. Baseball on the table. I just watched Giancarlo Stanton hit a grand slam off the facing of the upper deck in left field. And boy, did that get me excited. The Yankees right now are passing the good vibes test. Everything is smooth. It hasn't looked pretty through the first 9 games. But if this score holds today, I mean, to start 8-2 going through Houston, who was the one of the final two teams standing in the American League last year, Arizona, who made the World Series, and the Blue Jays, who a lot of folks picked to finish ahead of the Yankees, to go through that trio and win 8 of your first 10 games, not too shabby. So good vibes all over the Bronx right now. Stanton having another big day. Meanwhile, the Mets up 3-1 in the fifth inning against the Reds, looking to take that series. I mean, not like the Mets are, you know, accustomed to blowing leads or anything, but we'll keep you posted on that game. But we got to start with what's happening tonight in Milwaukee. I mentioned it's a big game for both these teams. Obviously, we want to, you know, look at it through the lens of the Knicks fan, and it's been frustrating watching what's happened to this team over the past week or so, where the pattern of falling behind early has bitten them. Because, you know, during this stretch of games where they've lost 4 or 5, they've trailed by double digits in all of them, and the slow starts are indeed killing this team. You listen to, you know, Clyde on the broadcast, and he nails it. Like, as much fun as it is to storm back from a 21-point deficit like you did against the Spurs, or a 25-point deficit like you did against the Kings, it exhausts you. And we know Tibbs loves to play his best player is heavy minutes, and he has to, given all the injuries. So, it's good to see OG back, but the Knicks right now don't look like a very good team. And while you can get seduced by the fact that they make it a game late, this brand of basketball, of falling behind early, has crushed them to the point where, I mean, if they had just maintained what they were doing prior to that Spurs game, they'd be the number 2 seed. And this would be essentially a clincher, because the Bucks have been faltering, more on them in a moment, but the Knicks would be the 2 seed. But since they have lost 4 or 5, like, they are in danger of falling to the play-in, just 2 games ahead of Miami for that 7th seed. So currently in the 4-5 matchup with Orlando, who has the tiebreaker since they've won 3 of 5, or I should say 3 of 4 against the Knicks this year, you got to find a way to finish the season strong and win these games, because you don't want to fall into that play-in. And now you're staring at a healthy Joel Embiid on the other side, a game you could very much lose. And then even if you win it, you draw Milwaukee in the first round, lose it, and now you got to have a must-win situation against Chicago or Atlanta. And here's the price. Here's the prize for winning that game. First round against the Celtics. So I don't want to be all doom and gloom, but it's just to illustrate, this is a pretty big game. In fact, the final 5 games for the Knicks are huge, because after tonight, you go to Chicago to play the Bulls, who you just lost to. Then it's to Boston. They don't really have much to play for, but that is an historically dominant regular season team, before you end the season against the Nets and the Bulls. They end up playing the Bulls three times in their last six games, which is, I mean, an awful job by the schedule makers. But big opportunity for New York tonight. You get the gift of Indiana and Miami playing each other. So if you get a win today, that's three teams you gain ground on. You gain ground on Milwaukee, who you're looking up at, and then you can kind of distance yourself from either Indiana or Miami right now occupying those 6 and 7 spots in the Eastern Conference. So I'm looking forward to this one. And I can't quite figure out for the Knicks, like, is this the best time to play Milwaukee, or is it the worst time? Why would it be the best time? Milwaukee's now lost three straight games as double-digit favorites. Wizards, Grizzlies, and the Raptors. You're talking about three of the worst teams in the league. And Milwaukee, with legitimate aspirations of winning a championship, a team I think is going to win the Eastern Conference, to have the season ending this way is an absolute disaster, because they are also in danger of falling into either the 3, the 4, or the 5. For a while, it looked like they had steadied themselves. They were locked into the 2 seed, but then came a 3-game losing streak at the wrong time. And now they are, you know, just inches away from being dethroned in that seeding. So it's a big game for the Bucks. Now, is this the get-right game for them with Boston coming up on Tuesday? It's a tough schedule for Milwaukee. You got the Knicks tonight, Boston Tuesday. Then you end the season at home against the Magic in Oklahoma City. They're battling for the 1 seed in the Western Conference, and then the Magic, who are looking to either move up in the East or just stay put in that 4 or 5 matchup. So no easy games the rest of the way for the Bucks, and it starts with this one tonight. But I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to see it. And, you know, we obviously have to discuss the unfortunate news that came our way this past week, and it was that Julius Randle is going to have season-ending surgery, and it's just dreadful. You got to a point in the season where you rightfully questioned if there was a magical run on the horizon, because things just started to go your way. From the start of the calendar year 2024 until the day Julius got hurt, the Knicks were 12-2, and they had the best defensive rating in basketball, aided obviously by the addition of OG Anunoby. And the worst part, honestly, is the dichotomy of emotions from the fan base that day that he went down against Miami, because they were crushing the Heat, the defending Eastern Conference champions, a team that you had just lost to in the playoffs the year before. You are destroying them on their home floor. 2 days prior to that, you thumped the Nuggets. So the vibes were good for the Knicks. And then late in the game, with the outcome no longer in question, Randle goes down. And, you know, once you see the initial report, 4 to 6 weeks, reevaluate, he's going to try to make a comeback. Initially, you were a little optimistic. Then the workout videos start to emerge on social media. He's putting shots up. And then came the awful news. And the longer this went without us seeing him back, we started to think, yeah, there's no shot. Because not only do you have to get him healthy enough to play, he has to now sustain that for the next 2+ months. And this is a guy who, you know, I always defend, but the narrative surrounding his playoff struggles are absolutely legitimate. So those are three things you're battling: him getting healthy enough to play, him sustaining said health for a 2-month-long deep playoff run, and him overcoming the, you know, psychosis of the playoff demons. So it just felt like we were getting further and further away from it being realistic Julius Randle was going to come back. And since the injury, the Knicks are about a 500 team in his absence. So you went from title contenders to the point where guys I respect, Zach Lowe, Kendrick Perkins, are on national television singing the praises of this team, to a squad that now might be drawing dead to win a round. So it's that quickly that it happens. And not that I'm wishing ill on anyone, but for all the Randle naysayers, this also speaks to how valuable he is despite the misguided disrespect that he receives. Because Here are the list of the guys in the NBA giving you 20, 10, and 5. It's Jokic, Giannis, and Randle. And people could say, well, it's not just about the numbers. You're right. It's not just about the numbers. But watch this team with Julius Randle in the lineup versus what they look without him and tell me they're not completely different. Can you say with certitude and with conviction that all these double teams, you know, the Spurs, the Heat, the Kings, all these stunts they're throwing at Brunson in the half court, is that effective if Julius Randle is standing there at the top of the key? Of course not. So I say the disrespect is misguided because, you know, people want to pretend, especially when the injury first happened, oh, yeah, not going to really miss him that much. He stinks in the playoffs anyway. Or, yeah, no, I'd rather have OG Anunoby. If we get OG back, we'll be fine. Don't just dismiss 20, 10, and 5. Don't just dismiss a three-time All-Star, two-time All-NBA player who had been playing the best basketball of his career in this uniform. Act crazy if you want to. Underrate him at your own risk. Perfect, Julius Randle is not. The second best player on a team that some of y'all thought just 2 weeks ago could get to the NBA Finals, oh yeah, that's him. And sadly, it's such a wasted opportunity because I would have loved to see this entire group healthy, navigate, let's be honest, an Eastern Conference with legitimate question marks everywhere. You can try to, right now, in this like mourning period, root your optimism and, you know, next season he'll be back. But these windows open and close pretty quickly. This was the year to really take advantage of some leaks in the conference. I mentioned the Celtics, historically great regular season team. But, you know, regular season is thrown in there for a reason. They're not unbeatable. I don't feel like they're going to win the Eastern Conference. I just, there's a part of the Celtics team that I just don't trust, especially in crunch time. And their head coach still has a lot of questions to be answered. They are a fantastic basketball team, but I'm not sold on them right now. So there are some questions there. I picked the Bucks to win the conference, but they've just lost three straight games as double-digit favorites. And since Doc Rivers came on board, they're hovering around 500. The Cavs, been injured all season. Knicks beat them last year. The Magic, really good, but incredibly young. Miami, I don't think they're as good as they were last year. And then there's everyone else, including the Sixers. That's the Eastern Conference. This feels like the year to strike. And you were playing as good of basketball as we had seen in quite some time, including a stretch where they went 14-2. Where it felt like every single night they were just either blowing out bad teams, hanging with the big boys, hitting shots late, and finding ways to win games. Jalen Brunson is special. Spectacular. I underrated him. Dante DiVincenzo, I was high on, remember, when the Knicks signed him. I didn't think he would be registering as one of the best shooters in the league this year and playing great defense. How about Deuce McBride? Everyone wants to tell me Tom Thibodeau hates young players. Well, that's a young player who was playing the best basketball of his career under Tom Thibodeau. Hartenstein. He's been an impactful free agent signing. Josh Hart, playing all year through injuries, having a major impact on winning. It's a culture that has been created. Give the front office credit. Tom Thibodeau, I mean, this might be the best coaching job of his coaching career. That includes that 2011 Bulls team. That includes the couple years ago when he was the coach of the year with this team, navigating all these injuries. But I just feel like it's just been deflated by Julius Randle, him going out. I would love to have seen what this group looked like healthy, because they would have been a problem. I still wouldn't have picked them to win the Eastern Conference, but I mean, that is a thorn in the side of, I don't care how good you are, you don't want to play this Knicks team. They're going to abuse you every single night on both ends of the floor. Here comes a Brunson three. Here comes Julius Randle on a putback. OG playing lockdown defense. Mitchell Robinson's blocking shots. Dante's hitting 6-7 threes in a quarter. Fully healthy, they're a problem. Unfortunately, never got a chance to see it. 800-919-3776. We're off and running here. Iowa up right now on South Carolina. 5-0 to start this game. So, again, we're either going to see, you know, history on one side or the other. Is it going to be Caitlin Clark rising to the top with the, you know, the championship that has eluded her in her final college game, going out on top? Or are we going to see South Carolina put the finishing touches on this dynasty? They're up. Iowa is 7-0 on the Gamecocks. 800-919-3776. We're taking your calls. We will react to the Mets game when that goes final, the Yankees when they go final, talk some football. But right now, we're kicking it off with the NBA right here on 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Ty Butler Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Clark wants all the smoke today. She has now scored, I believe it's the last 13 points for Iowa, as the Buckeyes are up 20-9 over South Carolina. I believe the spread of this game, Gamecocks were 7.5-point favorites. Basketball, game of runs, we know all the cliches, and because of the barrage of three-point shooting, even, you know, at the women's D1 level, that regression or progression to the mean, we also have variance that'll take shape, so you don't want to overreact to, you know, first couple of minutes of the first quarter of a game. But right now, it feels like the Buckeyes are the better team. And Caitlin Clark, she obviously wants to go out on top. She knows the amount of pressure that comes with being, you know, the face of the sport. And in your last game, having that championship belt hanging over the ladder, WWE style, and you needed to grab it before you go to the WNBA and be the number one pick. But, I mean, she's come out, looked the part, and after struggling somewhat with her shot on Friday night, still made some clutch plays. She's come out red hot and it's given South Carolina all the work. So we'll continue to talk about that game. But let's go to the phone lines, 800-919-3776. We start off with Dante in Queens. He says hello on a Sunday. What's up, Dante?
Hey, what's up? Thanks for taking my call. Don't get me wrong. I love Randall. I love that he plays at an all-star level. But at the end of the day, you know, this the second straight year, you know, not going to be effective in the playoffs. I think at this summer, I really think you need to find a deal for him. And the other thing that irritates me is that if you knew you re-aggravated the shoulder, why not just come out clean then and say, hey, listen, I gave it a go. I need to get the surgery. Why wait 4 weeks after that? Having everybody thinking you're coming back, ridiculous.
We don't know the actual timeline, Dante. We don't know the timeline that was 4 weeks ago, and we don't know, you know, as far as like his medicals are concerned, how much damage he did initially, and if there was a thought that he could still make a way back. Like the fact that you're choosing to go that angle as opposed to, look, this guy could have months ago elected to have surgery, but he fought hard to get back to a team that could, you know, in his mind, win a championship, and you should applaud that as a fan. That's not a demerit. That's a good thing.
I applaud, but I feel like because once the report came out that he had to have season-ending surgery, I mean, obviously, I don't know the exact timeline, but when he said it re-aggravated it, it seemed like, okay, they cleared for a little contact. Like, and I guess, listen, the fans don't matter. At least your teammates. Don't they have a right to know, not to be left in limbo?
Well, who says they didn't know? Who are we to say that his teammates didn't know? We have no, and it actually does sound like they knew. When you listen to, you know, Josh Hart and Tom Thibodeau, like what they were saying to the media in the days leading up to the news, it sounded like they did have an idea that he wasn't coming back.
Yeah, but no, because I know Thibodeau said that he put the ball in his, that he had to be comfortable with it. And that was a new report. And I know Hart said he was, like, on the fence about them coming back and everything like that.
Yeah, I don't know. This just feels like you're Julius, appreciate the call, Dante. If Julius Randle is someone you don't like, this just feels like a way for you to fetch to grab onto more criticism or more ammunition to criticize him. I am not going to sit here during a season that saw this team experience a multitude of injuries and criticize him for doing everything in his power to come back. I cannot do that. You can say he's got to make up for the playoff failures. You can say like his game, we still don't have any evidence that his game is winning basketball come crunch time, come the postseason. We can do all of that. the idea that you're going to sit here today and blame him for not alerting the fans, you know, every step of the timeline as far as his shoulder injury is concerned, I mean, that's weak. That you're just fetching for material to go at, and I think that that's unfair. We had the same peak. We talked to Spike. What's up, Spike?
Hey, my friend. Dude, I'm watching Caitlin Clark, man. This girl is smoother than a pound of butter in the Arizona heat. I can't get enough of her, man. She's quick, got that first quick step like Marbury had. She got the sweetest shot, very similar to Steph, quick release, yeah. Little higher release.
And she pulls you to the television like Steph does.
Yeah,
she pulls you to the TV,
man,
like Steph does.
And you know me fairly well, but I like basketball below the rim. The thing that bothered me about NBA basketball, and I love it as much as anybody, you know, as much, I can't say more because that's, I can't quantitate that. But it always bothers me unless it's the last or next to last shot and you need a three when they pass it out when you're 2 feet away. That always bothers me. This girl sees stuff. I'll tell you, she's going to have a rude awakening coming into the pros. They're going to bang her around a little bit, but she seems a step and a half faster than anybody. And she's cool. She's a real cool cat. I'll tell you, it's fun to watch. And her teammates are pretty good. So we'll see where this goes. I'm not overreacting to a 20-9 lead, you know, but she gets loose and sees the floor. Okay, with the Knicks, listen, I have never been a gigantic Julius Randle supporter, but He plays his ass off. He always shows up. The microcosm of him was that winning game shot where he fumbled the ball away on the right hash mark with three guys on him in Miami.
Yeah, against Miami. Yeah, I see it. Yep.
Yeah, that's his game. He almost lost the ball twice, and he put it in. He gives
that's
you
funny. I never thought
out.
About it like that, but that is a good way to classify him. It doesn't look pretty. Everyone's like, no, 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 and then it actually works out.
Yeah, that was a 40-foot swing that went in after he almost bounced the ball off his foot and got it. Was just his power, and he gives you size. But I'll tell you something, when people match up, and, you know, we know it pretty good, and you know the people I know, et cetera, who know it really well, the game. A guy like Josh Hart plays bigger than 6'4". I mean, he just does. He gets it to 70-30, 80-20 on loose ball, and he uses his back against bigger guys. Everyone they have, and free agents, OG and Hartenstein is a great pocket passer. He's a beast on the boards. And Thibodeau has done his best job coaching. They lost a couple of close games. Brunson has arrived. If he doesn't make first or second team All NBA,
I don't think he's going to get first team. I heard you say that on the K show. He's not going to get first team. Luka and SGA.
Why not?
Because Luka and SGA.
And who else?
Yeah.
Well, how does SGA and who else?
And Luka. Yeah.
Okay. Well, help me here. How do they do it? By position or by or best five?
Well, they got rid of positions, unfortunately, which I think
is a
mistake.
You could take five small guys or five big guys.
Yeah, they're not going to do that. But you'll have Giannis, Jokic, SGA, Luka, and probably Tatum. I would say are your five guys.
I'll tell you,
Tatum's going to get first team All NBA since he's going to have a 65-win team. He's playing on.
I faded the Celtics in January. There's something about Tatum. There's just something about him. That tells me that he doesn't – his stats show it. I quantified this in analytics. Tatum is not – besides the 50 he put up in that game, his fourth quarters in the playoffs leave a lot to be desired.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not knocking the kid. He's just a bad shot maker and a bad shot taker. And I faded the Celtics. I don't know if it'll be the Bucks. I don't know. I think the Celtics got the best of the trade with Holiday over Dame. I just do. I think he's a better two-way player.
Yeah.
And Dame's a great shot maker. But I don't know who's coming out of the East. But I'll tell you, I don't think it's Boston. Something about it is missing. I don't know if it's the bench or Missoula. Something. I told you this 3 months
that.
Ago.
I appreciate the call, Spike. Just a quick update on what's happening in the national championship game in the women's tournament. You have South Carolina falling down early. I believe it was like 20-7. They've fought back. It's now 22-15. And the Buckeyes haven't scored a field goal in the last 4 minutes of this game. So they're mounting a run. You know, there's a lot of nerves in this game. Chance to win a championship. And these are, you know, young women at the end of the day. So to start the game, you don't want to overreact to what was going on. But when you saw Caitlin Clark score 11 or 13 straight points and she was cooking them, you felt like, man, this could get ugly early. But 800-919-3776, we'll keep you posted on that. Got the Yankees and the Mets in action, so once those go final, we will break those games down. Chris Canty at the top of the hour to talk some NFL. Ty Butler going to 630 right here on 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Ty Butler Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Yo, something amazing's happening. Couple things. Caitlin Clark's got 18 points in the first quarter as Iowa's up 27-20. The second amazing thing that's happening is actually being masked as something a little negative. So the producers just told me that people are calling to the station because they've got like their numbers mixed up. So they think they're calling ESPN customer service to complain because they're looking for the, you know, the broadcast of this game, the regular broadcast, because you get your alternate casts, but people are looking for, you know, Ryan Rucco, my guy, who's doing an awesome job, doing an incredible job, him and Rebecca Lobo. But they're looking for the game, and why that's cool is because it's a testament to how much this sport has grown. So the numbers came in, 14.2 million people tuned into UConn versus Iowa on Friday night, a game that I thought was so anticlimactic just because the officials got in the way of what was a good ending. But, you know, all that aside, the fact that this is garnering that much attention to the point where people are calling in looking for the regular broadcast, like that's so dope to see that this product has produced that, you know, captivity and has grown to such a level, highlighted by the biggest stars, of course. You get Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, and you get Paige, and you get Juju, and now it's a game of the best team versus the best player. Best team versus the best player. So it's an awesome, awesome story, and regardless, we're going to have a reaction to it. Gamecocks obviously have not lost a game this entire season, hadn't lost a game all of last season until they faced Iowa in the tournament. So they're looking to avoid having back-to-back undefeated seasons spoiled by Caitlin Clark and her brilliance. She put 41 on them last year. So far, she's got 18 through the first quarter, so we'll keep you posted on that. How about let's go to the weird? That was the wonderful. Let's go to the weird. Harvey, hello. How you doing, buddy?
What's good, man?
So last night, I'm lying in bed with my wife. Kids are at the in-laws' house, and that tells you the possibilities are endless, right? You and wife, you laying in bed with no kids. I mean, there's so many things that could happen. We caught ourselves watching WrestleMania last night.
Oh, that's definitely a possibility. Yeah.
WrestleMania definitely out there. Didn't have that at the top of the power rankings. So because like the last couple weeks, I had run into like that Robin Lundberg on. Obviously, I'm cool with Peter, and you know he's doing the countdown show, doing a great job at WrestleMania. I had come across like this feeling of FOMO, I guess you could call it. Like I was missing out on something huge because The Rock comes back. He now is injected into the storyline. So the WWE has to figure out a way to have him be at WrestleMania, but have it make sense as well. So he hooks up with his cousin, Roman Reigns, and they're going at Cody Rhodes. And who's the other one? Cody Rhodes and
Seth Rollins.
Seth Rollins. Seth freaking Rollins.
That's right.
Right. Seth freaking Rollins. So I'm watching that main event tag team match last night. And it started off a little bit slow, but ultimately The Rock and Roman Reigns were able to get the victory, and it brought me back, man. It was nostalgia, because I remember being a huge, avid wrestling fan growing up, and a part of me misses being that into it, even though we know it's not real, but when you're a kid, it's real to you, and I'm going back Stone Cold, and, you know, and The Rock, and The Undertaker, and The Kane. It's, by the way, it was a list that came out of like the greatest WWE wrestlers of all time. And Kane was hovering somewhere around like 18 or 19. That's a bad list. He's got to be higher than that. But yeah, brought back the nostalgia. Did you engage in any WrestleMania festivities last night?
Absolutely. I took it in. I took in the whole first night, and I'm going to take it in tonight as well.
Yeah. So two nights. So growing up for me, it was only one night, Sunday evening. But this event has gotten so big that they made it two nights, and they're selling out the link. They had 70,000 people there last night.
Yeah, and if you didn't know, it was cold over there. They kept showing us like 51 degrees with like a wind chill of like 15 or something like that.
Man, that's amazing. That is absolutely amazing. And, you know, shout out also Pat McAfee, because he is putting that work in. He's got the big time show on ESPN, and he's on, you know, as a color commentator alongside Michael Cole. And I thought he did a fantastic job last night. He brings energy, he brings personality, and he's fit for the WWE because his persona lines up with that product. But yeah, that was me last night watching The Rock. Him and his cousin, win the tag team matchup. So if I have it correctly, you're going to get Roman versus Cody Rhodes tonight. That's the main event tonight?
Yep, Bloodline rules, so anything goes.
Bloodline rules, because that was what was at stake yesterday.
Yes.
If Cody and Seth Rollins had won, there would have been no Bloodline rules. But this...
Yeah, it would have just been straight up one-on-one.
Yeah, just a straight up one-on-one. But now anything goes.
That's right.
Anything goes tonight. So what time does that get started?
The event or just the main event?
Yeah, this is just the main event. Like, give me a ballpark.
Say about 10:30.
Because last night was like 10:45-ish. Or no, it started a little bit earlier than that. Last night, maybe like 10:15-ish was when it got popping. So, yeah, maybe I'll tap in tonight. But I found myself watching WrestleMania. South Carolina have pulled to within... 3 of Iowa right now, just over 8.5 minutes remaining in the second quarter. As I mentioned, Caitlin Clark had 18 points in the first quarter, but right now what's keeping South Carolina in this game is the bench scoring. They've outscored the Buckeyes 15-0, so their second unit is doing everything in its power to keep this game close. And that's what I'm rooting for, honestly. I want to see some drama late. The officials ruined that Friday night game. I mean, Paige, we wanted to see Paige get a shot to win the game. Coming off of that dribble handoff, they're going to call a moving screen. Like, that's really the way we want to end a game of that magnitude. And I get, you know, if it's the right call, it's the right call at any point in the game, whether it's the first quarter or the final couple of seconds. But we don't want that there. I don't even think it was the right call. I wanted to see Paige get her shot, no pun intended, to win that game after Caitlin had a chance to ice it. And we just didn't get that. But, you know, Gamecocks have now tied it at 27. And it looks like this one is going to come all the way down to the wire. 7.5-point favorites they were. Then tomorrow night you get UConn and Purdue. Huskies opening up as 6.5-point favorites in the championship game against Purdue. And at this point, how do you bet against the defending champs? Like, it's hard to, with conviction... say, I'm picking against UConn. Best offense, top five defense, and a ridiculous point differential. Alabama showed in that game yesterday that, yes, if you hit every three, you can hang with UConn. But the Huskies are banking on math, and that is the regression to the mean. And once that happens, you're simply not good enough to compete with them. UConn, coming into last night's game, had trailed for only 28 seconds in the tournament. 28 seconds. I don't know what's more impressive, that or the 30-0 run they went on against Illinois. But what does it say about them that their first big test didn't come until the Final Four? Think about how great you are if your biggest slice of adversity is a 5-point first-half deficit. So that's the pick. It would be a monumental upset. I know the spread only says 6.5 and it's a title game. But if UConn doesn't win that game tomorrow, that's a choke job. And I had some fun reading this quote in the ESPN.com article today. It said, after the game, the Purdue locker room was enveloped in humility that belied the moment. There were no cheers or fist pumps, just a bunch of young folks who rested long enough to catch their breaths, but had not completely exhaled. Yeah, you know why you can't exhale? Because 2 days from after that win, you got to play the Huskies, who are going for their second straight championship. And I wonder, for Purdue, is this already a success? You had to respond to that embarrassing loss last year, losing to FDU in the first round. Do you already feel like, all right, we got the monkey off our back? You try to fight it, because that was the low point of a lot of these young athlete's career, never experiencing something like that. But they'll look to try to do what Virginia did, you know, after Virginia had lost to, what was it, UMBC in the round of 64 and then come back and win the championship. So it's going to be a lot of Zach Edey, great shooting by Purdue, and then hopefully limiting all the time. I believe they had 16 turnovers in that game yesterday, so obviously you can't do that against a team like the Huskies. We take a timeout, come back, update you on what's happening in baseball, talk to Chris Caney at the top of the hour all over the NFL. Ty Butler going to 6:30 right here on 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Ty Butler Show on 98.7 ESPN.
At MikePetro23, some love on Twitter, because he points out, Ty, you keep calling them the – I don't know why I got the Ohio State Buckeyes on my mind. I keep calling Iowa the Buckeyes. Obviously, it's the Hawkeyes, and the Hawkeyes right now are trailing for the first time in this game as South Carolina just gained the lead. So – once again, we're going to keep you posted on everything happening in this one. It's a really, really entertaining affair so far between two powerhouses. So we'll keep you posted on what's going on at Yankee Stadium. We've got the Bombers up 5-3. Giancarlo Stanton, there's a conversation to be had about him because I just found it odd. Like the way you talk about Stanton, like, you would think that he's older than what he is. Like, it's really amazing to see how a guy who was once a league MVP not all that long ago has been relegated to a discussion about whether or not he's still gonna play when Dominguez comes back. And sometimes I had to, like, look this up. I knew it, but I wanted to look it up to confirm. Stanton's only 34 years old. We talk about him like he's 44. And it's, and I'm not blaming us. I'm saying that's just like how much he's deteriorated. 7 years ago, league MVP, 59 home runs. Just 3 years ago, he hit 35, but he was so awful last year, and he's always injured. It's just hard to really construct a conversation around depending on the likes of Giancarlo Stanton. Because think about it, if you're a Yankee fan, and you go through your list of, all right, the guys that we're most counting on if we are to achieve our ultimate goal. You go to like Soto and Judge and Glaber and Rizzo, throwing, you know, Verdugo, Dominguez. Like these guys jump to the top of, you know, to the top of the rankings. You don't often mention Stanton because like there's no longer an expectation he is going to be a major contributor for an extended period of time. Now, can he have a hot 2 weeks? Of course. He's still one of the most prolific home run hitters we've ever seen. It's just that the combination of the injury and the lack of consistency when it comes to just simply making contact has now caused us to deviate from including him in the large and the big picture of if this team is contending, who are the most important pieces. But last night, he had his first three-hit night in 2 years, and that's what got me to thinking about it. That's your first three-hit night in 2 years? Now, I don't want to be that guy who, in the face of something we should be praising, criticizes you. It's just amazing that someone of that caliber, who's that elite from a talent perspective, is the graphic is showing up. First three-hit night in 2 years. That's amazing. And today, had the grand slam in the first inning, gave the Yankees a 5-1 lead after Rizzo drew an amazing walk. Prior to that, they didn't want any smoke with Judge, so they walked him. Rizzo had a nice at bat, got on base, and then Rizzo, I mean, smashed a grand slam off the facing of the upper deck in left field. And then we go to the Mets, who are it's kind of a big game today for the Mets, right? Like, we can't overreact to the first nine games of a season, but it would be dishonest of us to say we are not, you know, woefully panicking about a 2-7 team ahead of a four-game series in Atlanta. Like, that's not what you want. So it's a big game from the standpoint of now you start to feel some momentum and some confidence. You start 0-6. And then you finish the weekend winning a series against the Reds. And by the way, should have had another win last night if not for a meltdown by your bullpen. So 3-6 versus 2-7. Look, that's just one game. but it feels early like a big game ahead of this series with the Braves. And then I get a text from my boy Ray, who's listening to the show. You give Stanton all this love for hitting the grand slam. Meanwhile, Lindor is breaking out of a slump with a home run and a double, and your comment is sarcastically about the Mets blowing leads. Well, I mean, listen, they blew the lead last night, so that's factual. And yes, you should be excited about Francisco Lindor upping his average to .086, which not that far off from, you know, blood alcohol levels when you're testing guys for, you know, driving while intoxicated. Yes, you should be excited about a guy who's being paid like a superstar, you know, inching closer to the 100 line. Yes, I would be excited about that too, right? But yeah, shout out to the Mets, up 3-1. 800-919-3776, Iowa, South Carolina, tied at 37 apiece. And I also wanted to take a second to, because we were talking about the NBA, we were going to go to football in a moment. Adam Silver deserves a lot of criticism for, like, many things. And we've gone over the officiating's bad. The in-season tournament was confusing. The All-Star game is a mess. And, you know, load management has become a disaster. They got the 65-game minimum rule for, like, awards that's been put in place to help mitigate that. But he deserves credit for the play-in tournament because it's created some intrigue where now every single night, these are games of meaning. Everyone's fighting for seeding. Everyone. So let's just look at the games right now. Rockets up 24-9 on the Mavericks. The Mavericks are trying to stay out of the play-in game because all of a sudden Phoenix has gotten hot. The Pelicans are right there. So Dallas could fall into the play-in game, and that's not what you want. So they got to win this game today. Cavs, Clippers. Clippers, you know, fighting to stay in that 4-5 matchup. The Cavs, because of, you know, how well the Magic have played, could fall into the 4-5 matchup. But they also, because of the Bucks' struggles, could get to as high as 2. Then you've got Heat Pacers. One of those teams are probably going to end up in the play-in game. The other team might be safe in the top 6. Celtics, Blazers, no thanks. Thunder could get to as high as the 1 seed in the Western Conference. You got the Bulls and the Magic. We talked about Orlando. I guess that 2 seed is still within grasp. Suns, Pelicans, huge. One of those teams might end up in the play-in game. Suns just blew the doors off the Pelicans earlier last week. So they'll have the season series wrapped up if they win this game today and, you know, a pretty good shot at staying out of the play-in game. Sixers, Spurs. Sixers trying to climb. Kings also trying to avoid the play-in game. Wolves, Lakers. Lakers could move up to the Lakers, because of their win yesterday against the Cavs, are in the 7th spot right now, or I should say the 8th spot right now, but they got to keep winning games. And they play the Wolves tonight, who are battling for the 1 seed. So all of these different ramifications tied to seedings, much of it emanating from trying to avoid the play-in matchup or trying to move up. I got to give Silver credit for instituting that, because it's given games late in the season that otherwise wouldn't have had a ton of significance a lot of value, and you're going to stay focused on them. And then, of course, you have the Knicks and the Bucks, who we started the show with. The Knicks blew a big opportunity at getting that 2 seed because it was right there. Milwaukee's trying to give it away. They've lost 3 straight games. But the Knicks have not been able to take advantage, and it started with falling down 21 in San Antonio. You followed up that with a loss to Oklahoma City. You know, SGA hits a turnaround shot to win the game on you. Then, you know, you lose that game to the Miami Heat, a game that you also were down double digits. You found a way to come back from 25 down against Sacramento, but then you followed that up with a loss the other night to Chicago. Playing much better of late, but you shouldn't be losing a game to the Bulls. So these games become of the utmost importance. So I'm looking forward to the full slate today. South Carolina now back down 2, driving into the lane. Just tied it up at 44 apiece. So about a minute 15 shy of halftime. This game so far is living up to the hype. It is absolutely living up to the hype. We take a timeout. Come back. Chris Canty joins us at the top of the hour, right here on 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Ty Butler Show on 98.7 ESPN.